Hi, welcome to the A Quilting Life podcast. I'm Sherry from A Quilting Life.
And I'm Chelsea Stratton from Chelsea Stratton Designs.
We are happy to be with you today. This episode is airing Monday, May 23rd, and it's a beautiful, beautiful spring day when we're recording this.
Yeah, it was really cool outside this morning.
Yeah, we're just hanging on to this nice weather as long as we can here.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have a fun episode planned for you today.
And lots of fun things to share today.
Yes, and including a giveaway that we'll get to in a couple of minutes.
Giveaway!
Love having a good giveaway.
Yes. So let's just let you start and share your quilts.
Yeah, so I'm really excited today because in recent episodes, we obviously talked about the infamous To the Moon and Back quilt, and I have finally mustered up the courage, thanks to Billy, to bring the quilt in and share it for the first time. So today I'm actually sharing the very first two quilts that I ever designed. So on the wall is To the Moon and Back, and we talked a lot about that in the past couple episodes. And as you can see, it's very crinkly.
Very well loved.
Well loved and washed. And I even told Billy, I said, oh, let's try to clip the binding down because the binding on some of the edges is coming off and I need to fix it. But I'm like, no, let's let everyone see how well this quilt is loved by my little boy. And so we're sharing it today. And
was this the first quilt you ever had quilted too?
Oh,
I wonder.
Yes.
So yes. Yeah, it's got a fun quilting pattern that kind of looks like clouds in it, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure Marion did it.
I'm almost positive Marion did it, but
I know she did this one.
Yeah. I don't know. But so speaking of this, something really fun. We can't share much about it, but Mom and I actually just got new fabrics for the next collection. And Mom had kind of challenged me. Everyone saw on the podcast, you should do a smaller version. And there was a lot of comments talking about do a smaller version. So we'll just say you might be seeing that in the fall.
In July.
Is that crazy, you guys? It's so crazy.
Yeah.
So To the Moon on the wall, and it actually feels kind of empowering to be able to share this today. So I finally have it on the wall, guys. I did it.
Yeah, I love it. I love how it's just kind of weathered, but still so pretty.
Yeah.
Does Finn still use it right now?
Still like uses that's his it quilt right on now. His bed? Yeah. Yep. He still has it on his bed, uses it, loves it. I get a lot of compliments on it from like moms who have like little boys. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know. So
Clover Hollow Fabrics.
Yeah, Clover Hollow Fabrics.
Wondering about the collection.
Yeah. And it's actually my only quilt that I've used a darker. Normally, I'm like just a low volume background.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
On the table, we'll move on. I could talk about this all day. Is North Shore. It is my second quilt pattern I ever designed. And as you could probably tell, I'll put a picture up, but it has that ivory background, which is so crazy to me how bright we've gotten in our backgrounds. But this one is fat eighth friendly and
walkabout fabrics
and just simple piecing techniques. It was good for me. I think when I started designing, I mean, besides the fact that I started with a 4-block quilt for my first quilt design, which is crazy, but just, simple piecing methods and shows off the fabrics. So,
and that was also in Clover Hollow?
This was actually Walkabout.
You already said that. Sorry.
Yeah. So North Shore and To the Moon and Back. Those are my quilts today.
First two quilt pattern designs ever.
First two ever, you guys. We've come a long way.
We had a collection in between Clover Hollow and Walkabout.
No, we didn't.
We didn't. Okay. Creekside was before Clover Hollow.
This is Walkabout, and then Creekside was before
Clover Hollow.
Yep.
Okay.
Creekside and Front Porch. There's a lot of fabric collections, Mom. We're really...
Yeah, I think 15 is what just arrived, right?
And I'm kind of like nervous because it took my last slot on the top shelf. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm going to have to start stacking the bundles or like fitting, like placing bundles. Go down a shelf. But I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, and it looks so pretty because it's finally. And I remember the day when I'm like, oh, it'll be so nice someday when that whole top shelf is filled. And now I'm like, oh, it's complete. It's filled.
Yeah.
But
I can't put mine up yet because we're filming in there today and I can't let it show.
That's true.
Right.
You know, this is actually an issue because I take a lot of quilt pictures of my sewing room to share on social media. And it is kind of funny because I'll go to take a picture and then I'm like, oh, I can't share this picture because it has a new fabric line in it. So then I either, like, moving the pre-cuts is fine, but having to move all of the fabrics, I'm like, oh man, do I really want to do that? And then I have to find something to fill in or people are going to be like, why is there that huge
space,
empty space there or whatever? But so I haven't shared a sewing room picture in a long time because we've been getting the fabric so much sooner.
Right.
So hopefully soon, you guys.
Oh, good. Okay, so first, Fat Quarter Shop sent us some lovely products. It's always fun to get a package in the mail from them. And they sent us three of these Mad for Plaid project bags in these beautiful colors.
New colors, I add.
They're great. They have a zipper on the top. And what I love about them is that you can see through. So you kind of know what project you're keeping in there. You could even put like a little fabric tie on this zipper if you want. I think that would be super cute. But yeah, love these Mad About Plaid. We have a question that we're going to talk about later in the episode about plaid too. So these are wonderful. And then
I'll hold up this one.
They sent us their Snail's Trail Block foundation paper.
Love it.
And I believe the smaller size showed up in the Sew Sampler box for March. But I didn't even know they had a 12-inch size.
Yeah, the 12-inch I'm like super excited about.
Yeah. So
look how awesome that is.
Yeah.
That is so awesome.
So
love it.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool.
So, and now...
Is that like a special type of block that a popular block or something? What makes you so excited to use it?
It's the Snail Trail block is just a traditional block, but it does have a lot of intricate piecing.
Yeah.
So being able to use foundation paper piecing will help you make it perfectly accurate.
It'll simplify and, make it better.
Is it a curved piecing block?
Nope. There's no curves.
Okay. It just gives that illusion, sort of.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Because I've never really seen that in any of your blocks I've seen recently.
Neither one of us have done... I think I might have done one in the sampler spree so long. There might have been one. I can't remember. But this will be super helpful. Okay, Billy, do you want to grab these and then I'll talk about our giveaway?
I love that it's aqua. I think it's so cute.
Oh, so yeah, the color is amazing.
Yeah.
And it is reversible.
What?
So this is a new cutting mat by the Eco Pico company. And I have the 24 by 18 inch mat here. And just for reference, I purchased this on my own. I saw it on another... it was actually Kristen Esser was sharing about this mat and said that she loved it. And so I ordered one. And I have to tell you, I primarily ordered it for the color because I thought it would be so fun for photography.
We are the same person.
But I've really enjoyed using the mat as well. And it has a lot of great features. It's, constructed with all environmentally friendly materials. It doesn't have any bad chemicals. It's odorless. It is self-healing. You can do metric or inches. And there are two other beautiful color combinations that are also reversible. And
what are the color combos?
Three sizes.
Looks like they have one that's a green, like a forest green on one side and a lime green on the other.
Okay.
And that's more brown or gray.
Yeah, like a brownish, taupish, grayish.
They sell on Etsy? Is that where they're from? The Eco Pico?
They have a website.
They have a website?
Yeah. Okay. So PVC free, that's one of the other things.
Oh, I didn't know that was bad.
And and it also, when it arrived completely, it ships flat and it was flat. It was not bent loved the shipping. So anyway, Eco Pico has offered a mat to one of our listeners, viewers. You have to be in the United States, though. Initially, we were going to try to make it open worldwide, but the shipping, he said, has just been so crazy if it's not in the U.S. So it will need to go to a U.S. address. If you want to enter, leave a comment on the YouTube post today and let us know your favorite color. So,
and I have it here. I went to their actual website. So there's the mocha brown, and again, it's reversible with like a light gray on the back. Well, you have pictures, right?
I have photos that will pop up.
So we'll pop those up. And then the other one is a jade green. So it looks like a darker green on one side and a like a lime green on the other. And then the one you have.
Ooh. Okay. So and those are the three colors. This is like Quetzal blue or something is what it's called.
I love this so much.
So good luck to all of you. We actually have another podcast next week, so we can announce the winner then, right?
Yeah.
Or no, we won't be able to.
Oh, wait, no.
Oh, yeah, we can pop it up on the screen.
Yeah, we can do that.
We can do that.
We will do that.
We won't know because we're taping that other episode today, but when Billy does the editing, he can.
So I'll have to, because it's 1 week away, exactly, because it's a fifth Monday.
Right.
Then all the entries will have to be in by Friday the 27th. Let's just say at noon Pacific time.
Okay.
That way
Billy can grab the winner.
I can finish the editing. And
finish the editing.
And upload it.
Okay. So, but that still gives you 5 days to enter.
So if you listen to this Monday or any time the first week before noon on Friday Pacific time, then you are eligible to enter. Let us know your favorite color. And then I will do a random drawing to pick the winner.
Yeah, sounds great.
But you have to be in the U.S. because, like they said, they're only going to ship to U.S.
Yeah. I was super excited because initially Max from EcoPico had said he could do international, but then...
Yeah, we love all
of our But then he messaged back and he said, I'm so sorry. He said the shipping is just terrible. Everything's getting hung up in customs. And so hopefully things will get better and then maybe we can...
Do another giveaway
somewhere. Yeah.
Okay. We love a good giveaway, you guys.
Okay.
Love a good giveaway.
So are we ready to jump into... Oh, Billy has a comment I see here. Yeah.
From the last episode, which you guys talked about your ideal sewing space.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of good feedback. A lot of people, a lot of people commented. And this is actually only a couple days since it's released, since we're filming this. So I'm sure more people will comment here over the next few days and week, but a lot of people were commenting on the music podcast, watching YouTube videos, watching TV while, you know, everyone seems to have their own different preference of what they do. You know, there's people that say, yep, I have to have music on when I'm sewing. There's some people like, I need to be in silence. There's other people like, I can't have any videos going on. Like you were saying, Chelsea. So a very, wide range of different sewing settings. But one comment I saw, and I wrote it down because I wanted to share it with you guys in case you're, or really everybody, because there's a dedicated sewer out there somewhere who wrote this comment. And she says, you know, we don't have a room for sewing space in our house. So I've made my sewing space in a corner of the shed behind my husband's motorbike. I freeze in the winter and I boil in the summer and have to deal with some big spiders from time to time, but it's still my happy place. So, and I didn't write her name down. I got it from the comments, but when I was going through looking for listener questions and everything, I saw that and I'm like, you know what? In all the years that you've been quilting, doing it on the kitchen table, dining room table, wherever, you know, at least you were indoors and you didn't have to deal with
that's awesome.
Spiders.
Quilters are dedicated.
Yeah. They are.
Yeah, we actually found a scorpion downstairs a couple weeks ago, and we have been kind of freaked out about it.
What?
Yes, and it was underneath the desk with Dad's computer right off the kitchen.
Why did you not tell me this? I have been walking around your house with my socks on.
I'm barefoot right now myself, so yeah, we've been a little nervous. So
stop it.
Yeah, so be careful.
Mom!
I know they're outside. I've seen them outside, but that was the first time I saw one in the house.
Now, let us move from scorpions to our next topic. How about that?
So the main topic that you guys are going to talk about today. And this is something we sort of shelved from last episode because you were able to talk about sewing settings for so long. An idea I was thinking of, it's always generated by other viewers and listeners by different questions, and I try to combine them to like a main topic. But I was curious if you guys could talk about some of the most important sewing skills for quilters to master, and if you can break it down to different levels, because I hear you talk about beginner-friendly quilts, intermediate quilts, advanced quilts. So I assume, again, as a non-quilter, that there are different skills that you need to have in order to do an intermediate quilt or an advanced quilt, and that a beginner-friendly quilt should ideally use more basic skills. So if you can sort of like go through those levels of different skills, some of the like the basic ones that you need to learn at first, and there might be people that try to jump ahead too fast, right? And they haven't mastered other certain skills first. So I was thinking if you guys could talk about that, start at the beginner level and then work your way up.
Okay. So I guess first and foremost is really measure twice, cut once. Yeah. So really starting at the beginning, your pieces have to be the right size.
Yeah.
So accurate cutting, I would say, is number one. And you need to use the lines on your ruler and not the lines on your mat. Use the lines on your mat to help you straighten things, get things lined up.
I learned that from you.
So, yeah, but I remember my grandmother telling, that was the first thing she told me, you know, measure twice, cut once. I can just hear her little voice saying that.
And her little voice.
I remember hearing my husband say that one time too about carpentry. You know, it's the same kind of thing. Like anything that you do like that, the measurement is the number one thing that you need to do. If you're square, it's supposed to be 2.5 inches and it's 2 5/8, you can sew as accurately as you want and it's going to end up wrong.
Yeah.
So
I think that's it. You don't think it's going to make a difference, but it makes a huge difference. Like even if you have to be on with your cutting. Like you absolutely have to be on if you want your block to come out.
And we've talked about this before and pretty recently too, but if you're using a pre-cut with pinked edges, I know with the Moda pre-cuts, they're generally right on, but, you know, measure them first.
Yeah.
And I sew from the outer edge of the pinked
part. Yes, same here.
And they're usually fine, but sometimes you might need to trim off an 1/8 inch of or a 1/16 of an inch to get it to work. So that measuring, I would say, is number one. Would you kind of
agree?
Yeah. Okay. And then number two, I'm going to just say is your 1/4 inch seam.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And I have a funny story about this that I think I've shared before. Because I was going to say it's an accumulation of things. So mom knew I had started sewing and I was kind of sewing like a mad person. I was just sewing anything I could get my hands on. I was just addicted to quilting. And she, your dreamin' pattern. No, not dreamin'. It was a different pattern. Anyways. Okay. So mom was like, hey, you know, I got this Desert Bloom fabric. Why don't you sew a quilt for me that we can take to market to just throw over a ladder or something that will really show off all the prints and everything? And I was like, yes. And mom's like, it'll be perfect. It's such an easy pattern, like blah, blah, blah. And oh, yeah, I can do this. So I sew this thing and I call her. Mom, something's wrong. Like you did something wrong. It's not... I realized I wasn't sewing with a 1/4 inch seam and the blocks were off. They were too small. And I felt horrible. I felt horrible. I had just sewn all these blocks the wrong size. And mom was like, it's fine. But it makes such a huge difference. Sometimes I'll even like double checking to make sure that everything, because it makes a huge difference for me when that's on and my blocks come out really seamless when that at least is on. So,
well, I actually have a story about that too. So,
oh, no.
I mean, my grandmother got me started and she told me to use a 1/4 inch seam, which for me was really odd because I had sewn clothing my whole life, and that's generally a 5/8 of an inch seam or half inch seam if you're doing home decor, and that had been the extent of my sewing. But so my grandmother told me about the quarter inch seam, and I was sewing a quarter inch seam, but just because your machine says it's a quarter inch, it might not be.
It might not be accurate. Inch,
right.
Yes.
And so
mine isn't.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to remember, I took this class. I had two friends from out here, Kathy and Debbie, who were taking a quilting class in St. George, and they invited me to go. And this was really the first kind of official quilting class I ever had taken. And the teacher, I can't remember her name, but she was a phenomenal long arm quilter as well, award winning, very modern. But I, you know, we were in the class and we took our sewing machines and we were sewing, and she came up to me and she was like, "Oh, your quarter inch is off." And I was like, "Oh, well, I'm sewing right on the quarter inch line, you know?"
Yeah.
And so then she showed me how I could move the needle on my machine and get it, you know, she brought a ruler over, showed me that, no, it wasn't a quarter of an inch. It was a little bit bigger, and showed me how I could slide my needle over 3 clicks and make it a perfect
quarter inch.
And that was life changing, because then all of these things that I'd had trouble getting the points to match up, and it all
came together and made sense.
All of my problems were solved in that 30 seconds. So, Billy.
So basically, everyone, new beginner quilters, they should check it with an actual ruler, not just trust your machines.
Right. Then, huh? Yeah, measure it. And so, and then I don't know if you remember, we actually did a video where you sew 3 1.5 inch strips together and then you measure, because they should come out to be, 2 1.5 inch strips should measure 2.5 inches after they are sewn. Right. So then,
so you can measure and check and see. Yeah.
So then the 3 strips should be 3.5 inches. And so then you can test yourself by sewing those strips together. And it's a really old video, one of our really earliest.
Let's pop it up. We should
probably refilm it. But yeah, so measure the seam, and then also, you know, sew 2 or 3 strips together and make sure that you have that measurement.
Yeah.
And are these things you can do even prior to just like practice, you know? So you go and practice sewing strips like that, measured, make sure you are consistently getting a quarter inch seam.
Yeah.
Obviously measure the fabrics that you're cutting, practice doing that.
Right.
And these are like skill building exercises that you can do before you ever even make a quilt. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then a lot of machines come with a special quarter inch foot.
Yeah, they do.
That really nails that down. The other thing you can do is use painter's tape or washi tape to put some tape on your machine. Yeah. I think I had you do that for a while.
That's what I did. And now I line my diagonal seam tape up.
Right.
But I measure it with a ruler.
Yeah.
And it's to the point now I can tell.
I can tell.
Yeah. Without even measuring, I'm like, it's off.
Right.
I'll look at my block and I'll be like, nope, that's off. And so I'm very meticulous about it. And right now, I'll be like, oh yeah, my quarter inch seam is on. Blah, blah, blah. Do you talk to yourself while you quilt? Does anyone do that? Maybe I shouldn't have admitted that. This quilt block is looking good.
Last episode, you did mention you were very animated while you were sewing.
That's funny.
I guess that's part of it, how you talk to the blocks.
I am. I really do. I'm in there high-fiving myself.
Yeah. No, but like with my Janome, it's a Memory Craft 6600P. I have to move that needle 5 clicks to get the quarter inch seam. And I don't know if your Juki has a quarter inch foot. I just got a Juki and it has a quarter inch foot, but I haven't really played with it much yet.
I think
it might looks have accurate.
One. If not, Camille Roskelly, she always swears by one that she gets off Amazon.
Yeah.
If people are looking for one. So
for a Juki, right.
Would you happen to have any answer as to why machines can't give you like an accurate quarter inch seam? Is it
Ooh, that's a great question.
Or maybe any of the listeners that might know, because know. You would think if they came out with different measurements that they would,
yeah.
it would be accurate, but you're saying and everyone should test and check it.
I don't know anything about like the manufacturing process.
The manufacturers are like, we're just going to put it off to mess with everyone.
Well, I don't think so, to be honest. I know you're joking, but I'm like,
I'm joking.
But seriously, because you don't want to talk bad about any of these sewing machine manufacturers, but it is sort of weird to me, I guess, thinking that if there's measurements on there, but they're almost always inaccurate, then I wonder why that is.
I think that's where the quarter inch foot comes into, because it's easier for you to make sure that you're keeping it there. Sometimes those lines are hard to see that are on the plate, the bed of your sewing machine. And so I know it's easy to, you know, move the fabric around. It kind of gets off track. So I think that's where some of those quarter inch feet come in and make it easier. Okay.
Yeah. So
it could be some user error as well.
Okay.
So not completely.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. Well, I think that's really good, because especially for newer quilters, if they are unaware of that and they are not getting everything accurate from the start, that might be why.
Right. Yeah. And then Billy has on our list actually operating a sewing machine. And that's super important, especially if you're paying a lot of money to take a class. And I have just like, my heart just goes out when there's someone in class and, you know, they've paid this money for the class and they've purchased the material and they've maybe even done the pre-cutting and they don't know how to use their machine, or they've brought a machine that has sat for a long time and isn't working, you know. And usually if you're at a shop or something.
Oh, no. Has that happened
before? It has happened. And usually the shops are really good to say, oh, here, we have something you can use today.
Oh, no.
You know, but I'm thinking if you were at a retreat, you know, it's just devastating that you're... In fact, I've been at retreats with friends and their machines have not worked. And it seems like we've always been able to find one, but... It's just, double check your machine, know how to operate your machine, take it in and get it cleaned. Especially if you haven't used it. One sewing machine repairman told me it's worse for a machine to sit unused than almost anything, because those oils are not getting moving. So,
well, maybe I should finally buy a new pedal for my Janome Gold. Guys, during the pandemic, my machine got cleaned. And I think they sent me back with the wrong pedal, and so it hasn't worked. And so for 2 years, that thing has sat.
You really need to take that in with a pedal and say,
"But I'm scared of him, because he said my machine was the most unclean thing he'd ever seen. He wrote me a personal note. And no, this guy's awesome. He's awesome. He's great at cleaning these machines. But he literally sent me back a note that was like, this was filthy. I have never seen anything so atrocious, basically. And I was like, oh, now I'm scared to go back and tell you gave me the wrong pedal.
Yeah, no, you need to do that.
I need to do that.
And you can let Ashton sew on it.
Oh, she's ready. Let me just tell you, my kids are done waiting for me to do things. They're going to go off and do everything on their own.
So I would say next, so we've got measuring, quarter inch seam. I would say next is to measure... you know, generally a pattern will tell you after you've done a couple of steps, you know, say this flying geese block needs to be 2.5 by 4.5. You know, measure those individual parts and pieces, because if they're too big or they're too small, it's not going to work to put it all together either. So measure as you go.
Yeah.
So
I also want to throw into how important ironing is, though. And I didn't even like my journey, you guys, has been full of mistakes, which is good, because I'm okay being honest about it. But it was my quilter who finally told me, because she was quilting my quilts, and she was like, hey, let's talk about the ironing. And this is why I love her so much, because she's a mom to me. And I had been just pushing, ironing out and like warping my fabrics. Right. I was like the most
aggressive.
Yeah, I was the most aggressive ironer ever. And she's like, hey, this is warped. Let me just tell you, that changed everything for me.
Uh-huh.
The ironing did. So I think ironing is just as important.
Oh, yeah.
And she's big on starching and I'm not, but she's told me, you know, the benefits of starching too. Right. And just, I think ironing is really important. So
yeah,
and thank I feel you like, to her for.
Yeah. I feel like they say like pressing instead of ironing. Ironing yeah. kind of the denotation is, you know, heavy handed, but yeah. pressing is, you know, setting the seam and moving. Yeah. So you want like, to press. Iron.
So. I was ironing so aggressively. My arms were getting muscly. Like, yeah.
So stop saying ironing, though. Like, get it in your head, pressing that.
Pressing.
Yes.
Pressing. Pressing people.
Yeah. Okay, so next up, I would say that pinning can be really very essential. Maybe not. I don't pin while I'm constructing a block.
I don't.
But when I'm sewing blocks together, and then pinning is very important.
Essential.
So essential when you're sewing rows together. Although yesterday I put a quilt together and I didn't pin because I was just like,
mother,
I'm just putting this together to get it done. But
I'll tell you a quick story, though. I thought pinning also meant I could just use Wonder Clips.
Mm-hmm.
Guys.
They're not as.
Yeah. Also a part of my journey I'd like to you know, put in a safe little box over here. But yeah, I realized then I was like pinning for real and I'm like, yeah. Whoa, game changer. So yeah. Pinning is winning.
Pinning is winning. Yes. Is winning. Okay. So should we move on a little bit to intermediate then?
Yeah. I'm going to let you go and I'll finish off with what I have to say because I think it's really important. Okay. So
I just thought about that. When you're an intermediate sewer, quilter, all of these skills that we just talked about are second nature to you.
Yes.
And then you can perhaps experiment with more pieces in the block so that, you know, a beginner quilter would probably want to use a more simple block construction where there aren't as many pieces, there aren't as many places for those measurements to get off. But when you're an intermediate quilter, you can have blocks that have lots and lots of pieces in them and
yeah.
you can and so that I feel like is just kind of if I'm going to say it's an intermediate project it's usually with that and then with advanced it there might be a technique like
yeah
curves or something like that but although I feel like once you have those beginner skills just kind of in your repertoire you can pretty much make any quilt block if you take your time with it
yeah
so those are my thoughts on.
So well, if I get a little clarification on like intermediate quilt patterns might just be not necessarily any difficult type of blocks, but just more blocks within
more pieces the pattern, within
more
the
pieces
block.
Within yeah. the block. Okay.
Right.
Or a block that requires more technique, like more, right. more of, yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're not just sewing squares together. You're adding different techniques together.
Right.
Like,
you might be making lots of flying geese or lots yes. of half square triangles
yeah.
all
or
mixed
putting
together.
Those two together.
Right.
Yeah. And that might, you know, right. it requires more from you to do that.
Right.
Okay.
And the more pieces that are in a block, the more difficult it is to get that block to come out to the exact size.
Yeah. Because you're implementing those different techniques
right.
and they all have to come together to make the one block.
Right.
Okay.
I just want to finish off by saying it's the confidence in it all is that it takes practice. I get a lot of emails from people who will say, well, I don't know if I'm how beginner is this? How intermediate is this? Because I've only been quilting for this long or I'm still getting into this. And I always tell them, you just got to keep, you can't let it stop you, you know? The confident, just keep sewing, just
right.
keep quilting. It doesn't, I have a whole box still. This is still a part of me.
Right.
I have a whole box of quilts that are not quilted and I cannot get them quilted because I feel like they're not perfect. And that is not a good wall to have in front of you just keep quilting and building your confidence. And hey, maybe I'm going to try half square triangles this time, and this pattern requires a different technique. I'm going to do this pattern next time. I think it's, we quilt because we love to quilt and it brings us joy, and nothing should stop you from trying. And I know I'm going to get comments that are like, well, where's your curved piecing, Chelsea? You know, which is, this is probably good for me. But I did get a comment the other day. I told Mom about it last night or whenever I was here. Uh-huh. And somebody commented, because I'm doing the blockheads and I'm like so proud of myself because I'm on top of it every week. And somebody commented and said, Chelsea, you should be so proud of yourself for sticking to a sew-along. Because like a year ago, I was like, yeah, my goal is to stick with a sew-along. And I had a really hard time with it. And I thought, thank you. I'm at a place where I can stick with it and do it. And all my blocks are pretty. And it was so nice to hear that from someone. So
yeah,
just keep sewing and quilting and building your confidence. And
right,
it's all going to come together. That's second nature and everything. So
yeah. And if there's a particular technique that's really difficult for you, also look for another way to do that block. You know, yes, there are lots of different specialty rulers for flying geese, for example.
Yeah.
There's the block lock, you know, Creative Grids has some rulers for flying geese.
Yeah.
Quilt in a Day has a ruler. There are just keep until you find a technique that really works for you for that difficult block. Half square triangles, you can use the paper, you can use rulers, you can make it bigger and trim it down. So lots of those more complicated blocks, or even not so complicated blocks, have a different variety of methods you can use to get accuracy.
And I've had people do that with my patterns. Like instead of doing the pinwheel in the center, they'll just do a square. And I've seen people do that with their blockheads right now.
Yeah.
They're like, no, I'm just going to put a square here and that's okay. I did the block and I'm like, that's awesome.
Right.
Like, you know, mold it to how you want it to be.
Yeah.
So.
Is foundation paper piecing a skill that is more advanced, you'd say, too, though?
It is. It takes some practice to learn it. I don't especially love it. I call it a necessary evil. There are some blocks that I feel like really require it. But some people love it. It does waste more fabric. I think that's one of my issues with it.
Oh, see, I would have that issue because I'm always like, yes, let's get those scraps.
Saving those scraps, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but sometimes, you know, I've made some blocks that you foundation paper piece them and they are perfection and you just are in awe that you made that, you know. So it's a technique worth learning.
But pretty much those skills that you talked about earlier on in this podcast, they all will help build you as a quilter up to that point. And then another question I had with, you know, you mentioned specialty rulers and other ways to do things. Would you still recommend that when you're beginning, you try to learn how to do different types of blocks without the use of those? Just at least try to? Or would you say, okay, you want to learn how to do a flying geese, just go ahead and use the block lock? Or to actually build those skills to learn how to measure and do all that, would you encourage people at least try it first without those things?
I don't know. I mean, I did because there weren't as many of those rulers out there when I first started quilting.
They weren't available to you.
But I don't know. If you take a class and you learn how to use a ruler, just stick with it.
And you're in love with that technique. Yeah. I mean, that ruler.
Because I know a lot of the patterns that you write you write them in order to do it without any specialty rulers, right?
Right. I do try to write my patterns that way so that people don't have to purchase something in particular, but then I can always tell them, hey,
you can use this size of the pieces. Yeah.
Right. So I always try to make sure that my patterns, when they have a flying geese unit in there, that the fabric requirements will still work if you're using a block lock.
That's genius.
I always try to make sure.
Awesome.
Yeah. So
do you guys want my golf analogy today?
Yes, sure. I want your golf analogy.
Sure.
My golf quilting analogy. So as you were talking about the different skills and getting there, I imagine, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, that if you want to, and there's probably, I don't know if there's any golfers out there that even listen to this, so they might be fast forwarding through this, but whatever. If you're going to improve your golf game, you're not just going to go out and play rounds of golf over and over and over again. you really need to spend time practicing on the driving range. So just hitting balls over and over and over again, not really playing the actual game, and practice your short game, your chipping, your putting over and over and over again. And then if you do that, then you're going to have better results when you actually golf. So my analogy to that would maybe be some, when you're beginning learning some of those skills, like I asked, can you do some of these things without actually building a block or building a quilt? Can you just practice some of these things, the measurements, the cutting, the quarter inch seams? I would imagine if you practice those skills before you actually got in and started making a quilt, your quilt's probably going to end up a lot better than if you just jump into it and learn as you go. And again, there's nothing wrong if you do that. Like, you're still going to have something that you're proud of. Like Chelsea said that some of her early quilts, they weren't perfect. You said the same thing, Mom. But if you do want a more accurate quilt, I imagine if you practice some of those skills prior to, your end result will be better. Would Absolutely. You agree with that Absolutely. Analogy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Great analogy.
And now Billy wants to go golfing.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, you can tell what's on my mind today.
Yes. Oh, I like it. I like it.
Okay. Well, I think that's a wrap for today's episode. Don't forget to enter the giveaway. Head over, we'll have a link in the description for the EcoPico website where you can go to choose your favorite color. Then come back and leave a comment on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we will...
Friday at 12 Pacific. Yes. That's when I'll choose it. Right. So
our next episode is actually a listener question episode that will air on Monday, May 30th, Memorial Day here in the United States.
Yes.
So just 1 week away.
One week away.
1 week away. That fifth episode that we get a few times a year. So. Yeah. Or not fifth episode, third episode, yeah. when there's a fifth Monday.
When there is a fifth Monday.
Okay.
Thanks so much for stopping by.